Let's take our Bibles, turn to Daniel chapter 1 this morning. Daniel chapter 1. I don't think I need to remind you of the significance of today, for if you were alive September 11th, 2001, you probably remember where you were and how the day unfolded and what a traumatic day that was in our nation's history. It was eerie the days following, that there were no planes flying overhead. I know that something that we live with now, it seems to be that the planes are starting to fly over Burlington again, but it was really strange, just the eerie silence, the peace that followed after the attacks of September 11th. And I thought I would never see everything just shut down nationwide. And then a couple of years ago, we saw something happen worldwide, that life brought us to a place where we realized, hey, maybe things aren't the way we thought they were, and maybe we're not as safe as we thought we were. And so we live with this American exception, because as United States citizens, we have had in our history the luxury and the grace of never seeing anything occur like what occurred on September 11, 2001, when a handful of terrorists used planes as bombs to fly into buildings and kill many, many Americans. It upset our way of living. It took away from us temporarily a feeling of our protection and our security. In those moments as it unfolded, we did not know what was going on. Originally, we thought there was just a terrible accident. And then, as the second plane struck the second tower, it was evident that something was foul on our shores. At the same time, there was an attack at the Pentagon. The unusual aspect of September 11th, that it was not our military fighting against a foreign enemy, but rather it was a battle that was fought by first responders and civilians who engaged in that conflict that day. As the terrorists flew into the Pentagon building and leveled some destruction, though not total destruction, it was a news liaison who happened to say to one of her co-workers that the Pentagon was probably the safest place in the world to be at that moment, shortly before the plane strikes. Something else that happened that day is there was a third attack that was planned, but was thwarted outside of Pennsylvania. The heroes on that flight seized control of the plane from the hijackers as the plane crashed into an abandoned field in Pennsylvania. It was eerie to read and to think about the words that were able to go out. For those passengers on that plane had begun to receive some sort of word and some sort of update about the events that were taking place around our country. One of them, a stewardess, leaves a voicemail to her husband. She begged him to pick up. This were her words. "I love you, baby. I hope to see your face again." In the days following, it was our President George W. Bush that made this declaration to the world. "These acts shattered steel, but they cannot dent the steel of America's resolve." Our national motto that we adopted as an American people concerning the events of September 11th, and for these past 21 years, we have set aside time to commemorate, to never forget the lesson that we learned that day, to learn that you and I, and how delicate life is, how challenging security is, and how good our God is. The national tragedy had a way of leaving an indelible mark upon each and every one of our lives. And a recent sleep study several years back even determined that the way that you and I dream our dreams today have some sort of reflection of the trauma of the events of those days. For each and every one of us remembers the images, the sights that we saw from our television sets, the pictures that we saw captured in magazines and in newspapers. When I speak of the tragic events of September 11th, no doubt you and I recall with a clarion eye those tragic images that brought us to a low point as a nation. But then again, I think about the heroes that stood up and rose up, that dug through the rubble for weeks and months, trying to rescue and to recover remains. And the impact that day had on our country, we are still feeling the reverberations of it. As today, those first responders who survived the events, though many lost their lives in the fires and in breathing the terrible fumes of the event, today there are still survivors that are struggling with cancers that they developed as a result of those moments. When I think about the lessons that we've learned here this year, the 21-year mark, it's of the inconveniences that followed us the next few days and even continue today. There was a time in our airports before the Transportation Security Agency Authority where you didn't have to worry about getting back to the gate. It used to be you could go back to the arrival gate, departure gates, and see your loved ones off, and all of that changed on September 11th. We've just gotten so used to it, now we just expect when you get to the airport, go early, because you're going to be there for a long time. The inconvenience of having to take off your belt and your shoes to have them ran through a metal detector as they check your bags is a minor inconvenience for our security, wouldn't you agree? But it's the fears that we live with that it could happen again. Was there anyone this morning that got up a little bit nervous, perhaps, that it could happen again? I remember September 11th, 2002. Was it going to happen again? September 2003, it could happen today. But as the days waned on, we seem like we're a little bit further from the threat. Yet today, we live returning to some sense of normalcy, at least the way normalcy can be defined after 2001. And I remember how the Homeland Security, the Department of Homeland Security that was developed in response to helping protect our shores, and how we used to hear about threats that were thwarted. It wasn't something that we just witnessed during prime time on one of our favorite procedural dramas on television. It was something that was happening in real time. There were agents that were thwarting off real threats. We don't hear those reports anymore. So maybe it's easy to slide back into a little bit of complacency. Without question, though, the attack did affect every one of us. And what was unique about those days is that as Christians, we knew exactly to whom we should turn. I remember crying out to God with a broken heart on September 11th, 2001. Do you? Many in our country sought refuge in our churches, looking for answers. And yet today, our nation seems all the more darker, having gone through a national tragedy many, many years ago. And it seems to be that we have found ourselves lulled back to a sense of complacency, where we do not think about the threats, and we certainly don't think about the need or the glory of our God. Today's message from Daniel chapter 1 ties to that introduction as we see Daniel's prayer for Babylon. And the big idea today is this: please pray for Babylon. Let's go, Lord, in prayer, shall we? Lord, we thank you so much for your grace and for your goodness. Lord, we thank you for the lives that we know of, from our church family, who went off and served in those days following September 11th, who witnessed the devastation, and Lord, still carry with them some sense of that post-traumatic stress of the events of that day. Lord, it was overwhelming. I can't imagine what it must have been there to be one of the hero responders who were selflessly laying down their life to rescue, just to do their job. Lord, I pray for our country and I pray for protections upon our people, every one of us. Lord, while we may not always agree with the direction that our country moves or the spirit or the morality of our culture, I pray, Lord, as your people who live here in this land, still the greatest land in all the world, I pray, Lord, for your sense of protection. And I pray, Lord, that we would see your grace day by day, that in tragedies and in times of great victory, as we just sang a few moments, to God be the glory, Lord, may that be the spirit of our hearts and the words on our lips as we leave this place this morning. To God be the glory. We ask these things in your name. Amen. As we look at Daniel chapter 1, we're going to find the four children exception in Daniel chapter 1, verses 17. Did you find it? Let's read it together. As for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill and all learning and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now, at the end of days that the king had said that he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them before Nebuchadnezzar. And the king communed with them. Say this with me. And among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king endured of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and the astrologers that were in all the realm. And Daniel continued even unto the first year of the king of Cyrus. And we see in the events following the king's invitation for Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah to come eat at his table, and they refused the portion of the king's meat, and they stuck to their diet. Something was unique and different about them. They fared better than those who were being groomed by the king. And as a matter of fact, at the end of that experiment, if it were to be that, we see that Daniel and his companions have emerged on top of the trial. They're on top. The king realizes there's something special about these four. They're smarter. They've got better understanding. They stand out some 10 times better than the other candidates who are being invited into the king's court. Now, that isn't just they are a little bit better. These guys are the cream of the crop. They're at the top. And we see at the very last verse in verse 19 that Daniel reigns until Daniel lived until he served the king until the time of King Cyrus. In verse 21, Daniel continued even until the first year of King Cyrus. There is in that statement the reality that, hey, Daniel's going to survive whatever Nebuchadnezzar can throw at him. That Daniel's going to have an opportunity to serve the king throughout the king's life, however long that may be. From that one statement there. Well, everything is great. Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, they're recognized as being 10 times smarter, 10 times brighter than everyone else. And then something else happens in the kingdom, as it does. There's never a day without news. And now we're going to look at the Nebuchadnezzar exception. It was Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel chapter 2, verses 1 through 5. Would you join me through there? And in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, dreamed dreams, wherewith his spirit was troubled and his sleep brake from him. Then the king commanded to call the magicians and the astrologers and the sorcerers and the Chaldeans for to show the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king. And the king said unto them, I have dreamed a dream, and my spirit was troubled to know the dream. Caleb, can you help me? Then spake the Chaldeans to the king in Syriac. Go back one. Then spake the king to the Chaldeans to the king in Syriac, O king, live forever. Tell thy servants the dream, and we will show thee the interpretation. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, This thing is gone from me. If ye will not make known unto me the dream, with the interpretation thereof, ye shall be cut into pieces, and your houses shall be made a dunghill. It was said of King Nebuchadnezzar in chapter 2, verse 1, that he finds himself in a place that you and I can really easy find ourselves in. When there's trouble, when there's problems, when there's weights on you, have you ever found how hard it is to sleep? Insomnia. It's not just your problem, it's a problem that plagues kings too. His mind was troubled and he had insomnia. He couldn't sleep. But he does dream a dream, and so he calls to answer the dreamer, find out the answer. He calls the magicians, the astrologers, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans. What's the significance of that? These are the people that the king turns to. People who are able to cast spells, who can try to divine the future by looking at the stars, people who can communicate with dead spirits, people who are wise that can look beyond the stars, look at everything and try to come up with the big picture. King Nebuchadnezzar has turned to his advisors, and his advisors weren't godly people. They were God-filled people, but not as in our God, but they worshipped and followed the God of Baal. Wickedness and witchcraft. And it is the astrologers that come back to the king with this demand. Actually, it's the king that asks of the astrologers to tell him his dream, and they say to him, well, king, if you'll tell us the dream, we'll tell you the answer. Makes sense. Sounds reasonable. Sounds rational. Not something to lose sleep over. But the king comes back to them and says, no. You're going to tell me the dream and its meaning, or you're going to be cut into pieces. And for their part, if they succeed, they're going to get rewards. And if they fail, they're going to meet death. Kind of a big day in the kingdom, wouldn't you think? All of the king's advisors are told to tell the king his dream. It's one thing to give the king an answer, but another thing entirely to tell the king his dream, because dreams are crazy. They make no sense. Have you ever had that dream that you were flying? And when you wake up from it, you wish you could go back to flying again? Have you ever flown like that before? I have no idea why I have flying dreams. I know some in here have night terrors. And just the craziness of your dream. I was in research this week. I read that on average, Americans experience one nightmare a year. One. Some of you say, wait a minute. That's like I experience one dream every 15 minutes. It's a nightmare. How in the world do they get away with that? Have you ever noticed how your dreams affect the way that you feel when you wake up? There, you can get grumpy at someone because they said or did something in your dreams because they seem so real. The realm of possibility for the king and for the king's council. This could go only one direction. For if the king would tell them the dream, at least they could make a stab in the dark and trying to figure out what it means. So it's the Chaldeans, those astrologers who look up in the sky and are pretty wise. They are the ones who try to work their way out of, peel back this onion. They go back to the king again and again. How do you tell the king that we can't meet your demands? Other than to go back to the king and say, King, if you could tell us the dream, we can give you the interpretation. And the king sees through what they're doing. He knows that they're stalling. And he says to them, You're going to prepare lying and corrupt words for me. You're going to tell me what I want to hear if I tell you what my dream is. And you're wanting to buy some time because you can't answer this. The king is starting to see through the weakness of his advisors. He understands that they're wanting to stall so that the time would sort out the dream. Have you ever noticed that about your dreams? You dream it, you wake up from it, and it's just terrifying. Whatever it was, it's on your heart, it's on your mind. And then the next morning when you try to share it with somebody, you can't remember what it was. When I wake up in the morning, I'll tell Melina, I'll say, how was your night? She said, oh, I dreamed all night. I said, I know. It's like you fall asleep and you start to kick in, you start to running or whatever happens in your dreams. That happens to you right away. I don't even know if I dream. But occasionally I can remember a dream, and it's usually those dreams that's when I wake up angry at her because of something she did in my dream. And I think to myself, how can I discern from reality and fantasy the dream? But that's just the way it has a way of tearing you up. But as the day goes on, it just fades away. Am I alone in that? Does that happen? Have you ever been mad at somebody because of a dream, and then the next time you saw them, you couldn't remember what it was? You knew you were mad at them, but you don't know why you were mad at them. It was because of that dream, probably. But the king knows what his advisors are doing. They're hoping that he will forget about the dream. I mean, the king, who is troubled in mind and can't sleep and just trying to hash this thing over and over and over and over, give enough time and you will forget your dreams. Isn't that the way it works? Time has a way of erasing our dreams. Not just the dreams that we sleep, that we experience while we sleep, but our goals and our visions and our plan for the future just has a way of making things seem not so big or as challenging. Time, that is. But I think they're probably also waiting out to think if the king forgets about the dream, then he's going to forget about this penalty. He's going to cut us into pieces. Because you have to know, that's not very fun sounding. Get the dream right, get the interpretation right, or I'll cut you into pieces. Because in order to get the interpretation right, it has to play out. They have to know which way it goes. And if the king dreams something in his past, well, it's easy to pick out and make it work and fit somewhere in the past. If it's something that's going on right now and present, the way you and I sometimes, whatever we're watching on television, whatever we're thinking about, that usually seems to influence our dreams. It would be really easy to make a connection to something going on in the kingdom and in the future, even better because it hasn't happened yet. And so you could speak to any possibility. But the Chaldeans, when they think about what the king has told them, they says, King, no one has ever made such a demand, and there is not a human being who could meet your demands. Caleb. The king's order is this. They can't do it, so we're just going to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. The wise men being the magicians, the astrologers, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans, and Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, every one of the king's advisors are going to be cut up. And you think about Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. They are not the ones who are to even be implicated because, I mean, after all, they're preparing for a leadership role. They haven't offered the king any counsel because he didn't call on him, but yet he's going to order him executed. So now we see the Daniel exception in the story. Daniel goes to the captain of the king's guard who's going to carry out the execution orders. And Daniel says to that man, give me an audience with the king. And he tells the king, if you will give us time to find your dream, we'll give you the answer. Just give us a little bit of time. Look with me at Daniel chapter 2, verses 17 through 19. Then Daniel went to his house and he made the thing known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, that they would desire the mercies of God of heaven concerning the secret, and that Daniel and his fellows should not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. And Daniel sees clearly what's at stake here. We've got two challenges. We've got to tell the king his dream, we've got to answer and tell him what the dream means, and we've got to come out of this alive. Even though it's going to mean that the wise men of Babylon get off the hook too. Verse 19, then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in the night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. So when we come now to these next few verses in Daniel chapter 2, verses 20 through 23, we see Daniel's prayer for Babylon. Even though Babylon's not mentioned there, we see how Daniel prays in this time. Look with me. Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. And he changeth the times and the seasons. He removeth kings and he setteth up kings. He giveth wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that know understanding. He revealeth the deep and secret things. He knoweth what is in darkness, and in the light dwelleth with him. I thank thee and praise thee, O thou God of my fathers, who hast given me wisdom and might, and hast made known unto me what we desired of thee, for thou hast now made known unto us the king's matters. And in the Lord revealing to Daniel the king's dream and the meaning of the king's dream, Daniel knows that the Lord has answered the prayers of his companions, at least as far as satisfying knowing the impossible and knowing what the impossible means, and surviving the inescapable. It was Daniel's prayer that starts out with, blessed be the name of God forever and ever. Where does our hearts go in the time of tragedy, in the time of difficulty, in the time of impossibility? Is it crying out to the name of God who is eternal? I think in the initial onset, our problems are right here. The things that affect me, that make my life miserable and inconvenient. And that difficulty, that trial that has risen in our life, has a way of getting us to that place on our knees. And it should eventually get us to the place where we can look up and say, God, thank you for this. Thank you for who you are. You are the one constant in all of this. I may not escape. I may not survive, but I know that you will, and you do. For you are in control of time, the seasons. You're in control of kings. You raise them up and you bring them down. You're the one who grants wisdom and knowledge. And Lord, there's nothing that surprises you. You know what's in the darkness. And what's in the light is with you. Lord, you answered my prayer. So where is the prayer for Babylon and all of that? Because Daniel's just doing what we do when we thank God for carrying us through a trial, meeting our needs, getting to that place of worship where we say, God, thank you for what you have done. Daniel's prayer is informed with the idea that he is going to be addressing a king who does not believe in God. And God has shown this to Daniel and given him the answer to a king that does not deserve it, because he doesn't believe in God, because he didn't call out Daniel and the sons of Judah. He goes to his old wicked advisors. Nebuchadnezzar is a Gentile king. Of course, he's not going to call out to the God of Israel. He's got his own gods. He's got his own advisors. And God, in his mercy and his grace and his goodness, is going to answer Daniel's prayer, and it's going to satisfy a king who wants to know his dream and wants to know the meaning of it. And we also see in that prayer, when God answered that prayer, Daniel realizes it, he's going to show some mercy to the wise men, even the ones who reject. And God's going to protect his faithful servants, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah. In Daniel chapter 2, verses 27 through 30, Daniel goes to the king, and this is what he tells the king. The secret which the king hath demanded cannot the wise men and the astrologers and the magicians and the soothsayers show unto the king. But there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets and maketh known the king Nebuchadnezzar what he shall be in the latter days. Thy dream and the visions of thy head upon thy bed are these. As for thee, O king, thy thoughts came into thy mind upon thy bed, what should come to pass hereafter. And he that revealeth secrets maketh known to thee what shall come to pass. But as for me, this secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have more than any living, but for the sakes that shall make known the interpretation of the king, and that thou mightest know the thoughts of thy heart. King, God's so gracious. He's going to answer my prayer that you would get your desire met. King, the wise men that you have called on, they are right. They are right in this matter. There's no one that can meet your demands, for they are impossible. But the God in heaven can meet your needs. What Daniel's going to reveal, we'll look at this next week, the prayer, because I'm sure you want to know all about that one. Prophecy, prophecy, prophecy. And it is a pretty big prayer, and it's not something that we're going to tackle on these next few moments, so we'll devote that next week. But Daniel wants to let the king know what he was dreaming about. He wasn't dreaming about unicorns riding on rainbows and playing harps on clouds. He wasn't thinking about an event at a mountain lake with his family all those years ago. Daniel reveals to the king that his dream is about the future. And that he wants the king to know that God will show him, has shown him, what is to come. That's the stuff of the dream. We'll dig into that next week. So the Daniel exception that we see here, he's the only one that turns to God and asks God for the answer, and God supplies the need, and he shares this with the king. How is it that Daniel teaches us that we should pray for a broken empire? How is it that you and I can pray for our country today in this time, in this remembrance of a national tragedy? Here's how you and I pray for a broken empire. Much like Daniel prayed for Babylon, pray for the king and for his subjects. We have an administration that doesn't get a lot right. We have a lot of people in government that doesn't make a lot of great decisions. We've got a lot of commentary that you and I could spend the next few moments on getting into the political realm. But let me just stop short of this and say, we should pray for our leader and for our government. Because they're the ones who are watching those borders. They're the ones who are watching out for the threats. Do you realize that when you and I pray for our leadership, for our government, we are not just praying for their safety, but we're also praying for ours. It's a little bit easier to pray that way, isn't it? When you're thinking about, Lord, protect them because I want you to protect me. You know what? I don't think that's a problem to pray for your protection. Because Daniel knows what he's up against. He tells Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah what's at stake. They need to know the king's dream, and they need to be able to answer the king's dream so that they too will survive the threat. But when we look at Daniel's prayer is so worshipful, and it is filled with this thought, overriding thought, Lord, your grace is so apparent. Your strength and your wisdom and your power is so apparent to me. May it be seen of the king. May it be seen among the king's subjects. May it be seen among me and my companions. Lord, may this be an opportunity for others to see your grace. I think in the days following September 11th, after the tragedy sets in and we began to adjust and adapt, we realized how big the problem could have been, but how much bigger God's grace was in that moment. Yeah, Pray for the king and his people. Pray for your protection. Pray for God's grace to be seen. And include this as well. Pray for your witness opportunities. For Daniel marches before the king and tells him, hey, no one could get this. This was a nut that no one could crack. No man can do this, but my God in heaven can. Pray for the witness opportunities. You know, in the time of problems, when they start to compound, and it seems to be that the weights overwhelm us and discourage us, and weights do that. Problems do that. That is real. Jesus speaks to how our focus should be in times like these. In Matthew chapter 25, verses 34 through 40, this is Jesus talking about the time when he sets up his kingdom, he separates the goats from the sheep. He says to those on the right, the king shall say unto them on his right hand, come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungered, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him and say, Lord, when saw we thee a hungered, and fed thee, or thirsty, and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger, and took thee in, or naked, and clothed thee? Or when saw we the sick, or in prison, and came unto thee? And the king shall answer and say unto them, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto the least of these, my brethren, ye have done it unto me. You know, the insurmountable, difficult, and impossible obstacles that arise up in our day-to-day lives, they do have a way of slowing the work, but they do not change the mission. It should burden us to get back to the place that we should have been all along. And maybe we've been there. Maybe this be an opportunity not to give up, not to change from where we were at. God, this is impossible. I don't know how we get through this, but you do. And Lord, help me to remember that what I do in your name is for your grace and for your glory. And Lord, use me in this time of difficulty to show your grace to others, that others can see you through me, through how I serve you. For as even as time changes, our mission doesn't. In the time of September 11th, 2001, I remember the president coming on and he called us back together as a nation. Go out and shop. Go out and eat. Live your lives. Return to some sort of normalcy to show these enemies, these cowards, that they will not bend our spirit. There's a lot of criticism the president got because people lost their life. Yes, there was a time of national mourning. Yes, there was a terrible tragedy. But life continues, and so does our mission. May that help sharpen our focus this morning in the days of this week ahead, as the Lord brings up opportunities in our lives to minister in His name. May the Lord use the obstacles that are in our way to get us to that place to where we can see that it is He alone that's going to move it, and that others would see His goodness as He does. Here's our response this morning. The big idea was to pray for Babylon. Remember to pray for the king and his subjects. Pray for your protection. Pray for God's grace to be seen. Pray for those witness opportunities. If we are going to keep that focus, we are going to have to reject Babylon's values, as Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah do. They stay right and true. And they don't take up the king's practices in order to get ahead in the king's world. They stay true to the God of their fathers as reflected in Daniel's prayer. In order to do that, we've got to make up our mind about what is right. Today, on the occasion of this national day of remembrance, when we identify with, as Americans, with a sense of profound loss and tragedy, we may also deal with a profound sense of God's protection in the years prior to that event and to the years following that moment. Thank God for what He has done. To God be the glory. And then lastly, don't fall away. Times of being overwhelmed or discouraged, stay true. Stand before the King. God alone did this. Here's our prayer, Lord. Reveal thyself in this tragedy that we may see thy grace.